Welcome to Sustainability Bridges, a EuroCiF podcast that aims to build bridges between policymakers, investors, academics, and civil society around the theme of sustainable investment. EuroCiF, the European Sustainable Investment Forum, is the leading pan-European association promoting sustainable finance and investment at the European level. In these podcasts, EuroCiF's Executive Director invites distinguished guests for a 30-minute conversation on current events shaping the sustainable investment community.
Hello everyone. My name is Aleksandra Palińska and I am the Executive Director of EuroCiF, the European Sustainable Investment Forum. For this episode of Sustainability Bridges, I am honored to be joined by Mr. Sven Gentner, Head of Unit for Corporate Reporting, Audit and Credit Rating Agencies within DG FISMA, that is in charge of the Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive, so-called CSRD. Sven joined the European Commission in 2004 and has served in numerous positions both in Brussels and abroad. Sven previously headed DG FISMA's unit in charge of asset management that, amongst others, developed the Sustainable Finance Disclosure Regulation, the so-called SFDR. And he was also a counselor in the Economic and Financial Affairs section of the delegation of the European Union to the United States. Together, we're going to discuss the Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive and the European Sustainability Reporting Standards, as well as the work being done by the Member States on the implementation of European Sustainability Reporting Standards, often referred to as ESRS. We will also discuss development of standards for SMEs, sectorial standards, including for financial institutions. Dear Sven, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Aleksandra. I'm very happy to be here. Very nice to be on your podcast.
Thank you. So let's kick off. The European Union has made major progress on the corporate sustainability reporting front, becoming the de facto global leader in this space. Can you please set the scene by explaining to our broad range of listeners from all over the world what the Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive and the European Sustainability Reporting Standards are about and what has been achieved so far?
Yeah, thanks, Aleksandra. So the CSRD really is our framework for sustainability reporting for corporates, as the name says. And if you want, it was the missing element in our whole approach to sustainable finance. What we want to achieve is that financial markets really get the full information around everything concerning sustainability. They need to know about the risks and they need to know about the impacts that companies face or that companies have. As you said, there are already other pieces of legislation in place, like the SFDR, Sustainable Finance Disclosure Regulation, or the taxonomy. But in a sense, what was missing was the origin of all the information, which are the corporates that need to provide that. And that's exactly what CSRD and ESRS are supposed to do. They're supposed to be the framework under which the companies report on all their environmental, their social, and their governance issues. And they should report both on risks and on impacts. So that's double materiality. And we think this is very powerful because it will give markets, it will give investors, but it will also give other stakeholders like customers or consumers all the information that they need to really make more informed decisions about where to invest, what to buy, who to contract with. And we think this is the very basis for enabling financial markets to play their very important role in the transition to a more sustainable economy.
Thank you, Sven. As you know from your previous experience as head of the asset management unit of DG FISMA, sustainability data is vital for investors and other financial institutions to make informed investment decisions and to prepare their own disclosures, for instance, in line with SFDR, Pillar 3, etc. In relation to this, there have been some concerns within the investor and financial institutions community over all ESRS data points being subject to materiality assessment. Could you maybe elaborate what has the European Commission done to address these concerns?
Yes, thanks for the question, because this is a very important point and I'm very happy to clarify a few things here. Now, what happened was, as probably most of you know, listening to this podcast, that the ESRS were prepared on a technical level by EFRAG, which is the advisory body to the European Commission on this. Now, EFRAG made a differentiation between certain data points that had to be reported in any case and all other data points that are subject to the so-called materiality assessment. Now, when we got the standards, the European Commission, we, if you want, extended this materiality assessment also, for example, to the climate-related disclosures, because we think it is useful for companies to go through this process on materiality, on the materiality assessment, and to really see whether it is necessary to report on things or not. Because frankly, if the materiality assessment shows there is no need to report on something, well, then companies shouldn't have to do this. Also, because we don't want to impose an undue burden, or we don't want companies to report on things which are not material, because that would also not be in the interest of investors. Having said that, making something subject to a materiality assessment does not mean that it becomes voluntary. It doesn't mean that it's the decision of the company to say, oh, I want to report on this or I don't want to report on this. There is a very rigid, robust procedure that underlies a materiality assessment. EFRAG, as I mentioned, the advisory body, at the moment is developing further guidance on how the materiality assessment should be conducted. There will also be auditors looking at how companies do that. And in the end, there will also be supervisors who will oversee this whole process. So I don't actually think that there should be any concern from investors that anything material or relevant will not be disclosed. However, having extended the materiality assessment to all the standards, except for the really cross-cutting requirements, we think it gives the necessary flexibility, or maybe it gives the necessary proportionality to companies to ensure that neither do they have to report on things which are not material so that they're not subject to undue burden, nor will they report on things which are really in the end not in the interest of investors because they're not material.
Thank you for this important clarification, Sven. Actually, I guess what the introduction of the double materiality approach also brings into the equation is that I think companies, in while performing the materiality assessment, will need to think not only about what is material for them as a company, but also what is material to other stakeholders, including investors and other finance providers. So I think maybe the message we can pass on here anyway is that I would say in most of the cases, companies that either receive financing from investors or even actually from the banks, at the end of the day, should, in most of the cases, actually disclose the data points which are needed for the compliance with SFDR, Pillar 3, et cetera, exactly because this information is needed and material for the investors, banks, and insurance providers. Would you agree with that, Sven?
No, I think that's a good point. I mean, but when a company has investors or stakeholders that really do need this information, I think that's a very strong indication that this information is also material to be reported. And that's also what is foreseen in the process, if you want, that you first clarify what is your target audience, what do these stakeholders need from you? And that's a very important point of this, yeah.
Thank you. From the perspective of the reporting companies, what would you say are the benefits of establishing strong corporate sustainability disclosure policies, but the reporting? I mean, what are the benefits actually for the companies of reporting sustainability-related information in line with the standards?
Well, first of all, I think there is a lot of demand for this information out there already. It's not that we are creating this. The demand already exists because a lot of investors do care about these things. There are, of course, also other requirements out there in terms of how you deal with sustainability-related issues, be it sector-specific rules on production of cars or building codes and what have you. So it's not that everything related to sustainability simply comes from the reporting requirements that we establish, but it's a mix of, say, sector-specific rules and the reporting that should be done in financial markets. So the demand already exists. I think there's a lot of stakeholders that want to know about this, investors, customers, others. At the same time, I think it can also be very useful for companies simply in running their business, in planning for the future, and then being able to communicate this to the markets. I think there will be more and more demand also for really understanding where do businesses want to go in 10, 15 years' times in terms of sustainability. What does their transition plan look like? How do they analyze both the risks and the impacts? And in that sense, it can also be a tool to run a company and to help with integrating all this information into the planning. And that's also what we're hearing from a lot of companies, that when they go through this process, it really provides them with a lot of useful insight in terms of what can be done over the coming years. Having said that, we are aware that these are big steps to be taken. This is a new framework. It's a comprehensive framework. It covers E and S and G. It covers both sides of materiality. So we do also try to help with the implementation of all of this. And we do understand that it will take time. There are lots of provisions in ESRS and CSRD that recognize that not everything is available from day one, that you can use estimates if things are not available, that in particular, say, issues like value chain and whatever do pose specific challenges. And I don't think companies need to do the same kind of reporting this year, or if you want, beginning of next year, that they will have to do in 2 or 3 years' time.
Thank you, Sven. I think this is indeed spot on, and I can confirm that from the investor community, side, there is very strong demand. And, in a way, it has been voiced for years, not only from the responsible and sustainable investment community, but also the mainstream, the need for quality, comparable, reliable sustainability-related information, which is essential for informed decision-making, not mentioning, indeed, the compliance with the other existing sustainable finance rules. This is also an essential information needed for proper risk management. And indeed, there has been quite a lot of debates lately, including actually the reporting companies that are explaining their journey with the sustainability reporting and emphasizing that this can be really leveraged for improved internal decision making, better risk management processes, and in general, better consideration as part of the broader corporate strategy. So I think indeed you are raising very important points there. Now, moving on to the next question. The Corporate Sustainability Due Diligence Directive, the so-called CSDDD, which will hopefully be officially adopted soon, entails requirements to adopt and put into effect transition plans with climate targets, which then companies will need to report on in line with the CSRD and, ESRS disclosure requirements. Could you elaborate on the expected benefits of these requirements to accelerate a just transition towards a sustainable economy?
So the interaction between the CSDDD and the CSRD is as follows. The CSRD is a reporting framework. So what we ask companies is to report on their activities, on their impacts, on their risks, and also to report when they have a transition plan, what it says, and if they don't have one, in particular in the climate sphere, whether they plan to establish one and when. The CSDDD, if you want, is a behavioral requirement and requires companies to establish certain processes to deal with the risks that are identified in the CSDDD. So if you want, the two frameworks complement each other. The CSDDD, as you say, will establish, when adopted, certain requirements in terms of transition plans, and it will then be the CSRD framework and the ESRS under which the companies will report on this. So I think the two go really well together and are two parts of the same coin, if you want. The one is a behavioral requirement, the other is how you tell your stakeholders about what you do and report on it.
Thank you, Sven. Could you elaborate on how does the European Commission intend to coordinate the transition plan related requirements in different regulations? I mean, you already explained in terms of how it interrelates between the CSDDD and CSRD. However, we are also aware that in an increasing number of sectorial rules, you know, this is popping up here and there. I mean, also including for banks and insurers in terms of the prudential regulation, but also increasingly in the real economy companies, sectorial requirements. Could you maybe share your views on that? And in addition, Do you believe we need rules establishing sectorial pathways?
First of all, I should say that it's good that there is so much interest in transition planning, because this is really the key to understand where companies want to go, and the key for investors and other stakeholders to understand whether they think this is credible and whether they should invest their money there or they should buy the products and so on. So I think this is overall a very good development. Obviously, what we want to avoid is a situation where you have different requirements in different areas that don't fit together or would require a company to report according to different formats to different stakeholders and all that. So, I mean, the very point of the CSRD was to unify the reporting, to get away from a situation where different stakeholders were asking different information from the same company. And that also is the case for transition plans. So what we're doing at the moment is we're trying to coordinate exactly the kinds of things that you mentioned. So, I mean, there are requirements coming in the banking area, in insurance, under the CRR and the Solvency II framework. We're trying to bring all of this together and make sure that it fits as much as possible. Now, having said that, there might be instances where, of course, a prudential regulator might have a different interest than, say, an investor would expect it to be. Also, not all of the reporting that is done under the prudential frameworks is necessarily public. So what we're trying to do is that, in a sense, the reporting that will be done under the CSRD is the basis. And then there might be areas where certain things will have to be added on top, because there's specific information interests by specific entities, be they supervisors or others. But the goal needs to be that all this fits together as well as possible, and that no one is required to report according to frameworks that don't fit together.
Great, thank you. And what are your views on establishing sectorial pathways? Because in a way, this has been also quite an important part of the debate. I think an increasing number of stakeholders understands the importance of having transition plans with climate targets and how essential it is to accelerate a just transition towards a sustainable economy. However, an argument used or put forward by various companies from different sectors is, you know, how do we really set those targets, right? Given also that they might be quite different for different sectors. And also you need to look at how does it link, you know, I would say at the global level. So some even are saying, well, maybe we should have some targets at the member state level. I mean, we already do have targets at the European Union level, which of course is very helpful. But yes, do you have any views on the need to establish sectorial pathways that would actually guide companies in setting climate targets?
As I said before, I think what we see here is an interplay between rules that are specific to the financial sector, where we have tried so far mostly to work on more transparency, on better reporting. We haven't really set specific targets or specific rules in terms of how businesses should be run. We also think that really the markets need to play an important role here in terms of investors need to take better informed decisions. At the same time, of course, we do have sector-specific rules, be it in automotive building codes, other areas where we have clearer rules in terms of when certain practices will be phased out, when certain requirements will kick in, and so on. So I think the two working together already define quite a lot in terms of what needs to be achieved. Whether we need to go further in terms of certain sectors and defining goals and all that, I don't think it's only for us to decide. I think that's a lot of discussions taking place in different areas as we speak, and I'm pretty sure they will also continue to bring more clarity here.
Thank you, Sven. Moving on to the next question, the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, SEC, has recently published the rules on climate disclosures, and some international jurisdictions are starting to adopt the ISB standards. Could you share whether the European Commission is liaising with these different standard-setting bodies, and what can be expected in terms of international consistency and interoperability on sustainability reporting?
We're very happy to see all of these developments in other jurisdictions, also at the international level, because we cannot solve this problem on our own. This is a global issue. in particular when it comes to climate, but also in other things like biodiversity and so on. So it's very important that developments are going on everywhere and that measures are being taken everywhere. So we're very happy to see this. We're very glad that the ISSB has established its first standards, that the SEC has now taken this decision, and that also other jurisdictions are looking at sustainability reporting. We've worked very closely, in particular with the ISSB, given their role to establish a global baseline. We've basically worked with them now for more than 2 years to make sure that the standards that they establish and the standards that we establish are interoperable. That means for someone that reports under ESRS that they should be able to easily report also under ISSB, maybe doing a very, very limited number of adjustments. And the other way around, to make sure clear, if you report under ISSB, what is it you need to do in addition in terms of if you want to report under ESRS? What we wanted to avoid is a situation that the areas that we both cover together, in particular on climate, that there we have requirements that don't fit together, that are conflicting, that are confusing for both the preparers and the investors. And I think we've achieved a very good outcome because, as you could see, when we adopted the standards last year, both we and the ISSB confirmed that they really are interoperable. At the moment, the ISSB and EFRAGT are still working on giving additional information on this, and we hope that giving additional information on the interoperability framework will be even more beneficial to both the preparers and the investors in terms of understanding how they work together. We are also working with GRI. There is a very close cooperation between EFRAGT and GRI in terms of making sure that those standards fit together. GRI also has reacted to EFRAGT when the standards were prepared and made very clear that they work together well. So overall, this is really important to us because, as I said, on the one hand, it's good that all of these developments are taking place because we can only solve this problem together. And it's important for the markets, for the preparers and the investors that these standards work together and that we don't create unnecessary friction.
Thank you, Sven. And indeed, I think you've done a remarkable job together with EFRAGT, liaising with ISB and striving for the alignment. I know it has been, you know, a lengthy process and probably not very easy at times. However, I think indeed the level of alignment is very high, which is definitely very much appreciated by the different investors, especially those that focus on global investments. The EU's work on sustainability standards now enters a new phase with the expected development of sector-specific standards in the coming years. Could you remind us the timeline for this and which sectorial standards will be developed first?
Yes. So the CSRD foresees the requirement to also establish sector-specific standards. Originally in the CSRD, it said that the Commission should already start adopting those standards in 2024, that is this year. The Parliament and the Council have now agreed with a proposal by the Commission that this would be delayed by 2 years, so we will start in 2026. We think this makes a lot of sense because we're still everyone adjusting to the first round of standards and implementing it. So we need time on that side. But also, I think it's important that EFRAGT and the Commission have enough time to prepare the sector-specific standards. So it's good that we have until 2026 to do this. So the first round of sector-specific standards is supposed to be adopted in 2026 by the Commission. This will be preceded again by work by EFRAGT in terms of developing these standards. So EFRAGT will run public consultations, will give everyone the possibility to provide the input, will discuss it in the usual fora, the technical expert group and the sustainability reporting board. And we then expect EFRAGT to give us the drafts for this first set of sector-specific standards in 2025 for Commission adoption in 2026. Now, the discussion is still ongoing in terms of which sectors exactly will be covered in the first round, so I don't have a final view on this. It's also for EFRAGT to see in terms of what kind of reactions they get to their consultations. But there will be a start in 2026, but there will then be additional rounds, if you want, probably a year later and 2 years later to cover additional sectors. Until we get to the full coverage, if you want.
Many thanks, Sven. We understand that EFRAG is planning to develop standards for financial institutions, meaning for asset managers, banks, and insurance companies within the next 1.5 years. Could you explain the reason for prioritizing these standards over some standards for the real economy, which may have a bigger impact on the environment and society?
So this is also part of the development of sector-specific standards. So to have specific standards for the financial sector as well, it's part of the same process. I think there's actually quite a bit of demand from the financial sector itself to bring more clarity in terms of how they should report on certain things, for example, financed emissions. From what I understand is that the financial sector itself said that it would be useful to bring this clarity. And of course, also from the other side, say from the investor side, from the user side, there is interest to bring more clarity on this kind of reporting. So this, I think, is the background to EFRAG prioritizing this, making it possibly part of the first wave of sector-specific standards. However, having said that, again, EFRAG will also go through the process that I described. There will be a public consultation. There will be deliberations in their own fora, including lots of stakeholders from different backgrounds. And then the commission will get EFRAG's technical input and will need to assess it once more itself, like we did also for the first set of standards.
Thank you, Sven. And indeed, you are right that I think in particular with regards to the value chain, I think there have been some requests basically for some more guidance in that respect. What I understand is a little bit tricky is that, you know, for the asset management, SFDR already sets up sustainability related disclosures. So in a way here now, you know, also in view of the future review of the SFDR framework, which is foreseen for early 2025, I think some questions arise in terms of how useful it is to have another set of sustainability-related disclosures for the same sector, and also how to ensure consistency and avoid unnecessary overlaps between the different sustainability-related disclosures. Would you have any views on that?
Well, I can only agree with you that we want to have consistency, and that's very important. I think that the timetable, the way it looks now, will give us ample opportunity to achieve that consistency, because as you said, there will be work ongoing on the SFDR side, the work on the EFRAG side, and the sector-specific standards we've just described. So we will make sure that these two things fit together. And as I said, in the end, it's the commission that then also gets the technical input from EFRAG, and we again then have the opportunity to make sure that what we adopt really fits with what is being done under other pieces of legislation. So I'm very sure that we'll pay a lot of attention to this angle of the debate.
Thank you so much. Are there any particular messages you would like to share with the investor community on this or other topics?
I think the whole approach that we've taken to sustainable finance is very much based on a very active role to be played by investors. Because as I said, we're focused on reporting, on transparency, on better information to investors, because they are the driving force in financial markets. So we're relying, if you want, on investors making use of the information that will be provided to them. And in the end, taking different decisions, better decisions in future, because that's the whole point of establishing this framework. I think if we get this right and investors get the opportunity to understand better how companies plan for the future as regards these sustainability topics, we really do have the potential to improve things. And in that sense, investors are a key element of this whole strategy for us.
Excellent. Thank you so much. On this positive note, thank you so much, Sven, for joining us today and for this insightful conversation.
Thanks, Alexander. It's been a pleasure to be here.